Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from the Lighthouse Hockey Podcast Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me on this Sunday morning via Zencaster is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, we are less than a day away from the debut of Bo Horvat as a New York Islander, although we got some glimpses of him in the uniform at the All-Star game this weekend. We're going to talk a lot about All-Star weekend in the second half, but I want to pick up with the guy who was the subject of our last very special episode. With a week of no games and lots of noise and one All-Star weekend, how are you feeling now about the Bo Horvat acquisition? Has your thought process changed, or are you still super jazzed about what the next 30 games might hold?
Well, Dan, did you hear that Bo Horvat shaved his beard before he flew to Philadelphia to meet up with the Islanders?
Surely that must have been his decision and not some sort of rule per the team. But I did hear about this, yes.
What? Did you hear about it over and over and over again?
I think I probably tapped out after a couple of, but yeah.
Well, because I heard about it before, and then I heard about it after. Yeah. And I really wonder, you know, if
did he even have a beard? Did he shave every day? I don't think so.
It just, you know, you have to, if you're the first one on Twitter to make that joke, you right. get all the clout. So good. Yeah, congratulations to whoever was first on Bo Horvat, whether or not. Honestly, one of the funny things about him, and I've been thinking about this the whole week as I've seen more and more of him, mm-hmm. I really didn't know what he looked like.
Yeah, no, me neither. Yeah,
as a player, like in my, you know, we don't watch all that much Canucks on the show, and I pay attention to them because you're forced to pay attention to them both because of the over-indexing of coverage that they've gotten and the over-indexing on insanity that they run their hockey club with. Right. But he never really occurred to me as an Islander, and I know people threw his name out starting this season, but he was more of the kind of tongue-in-cheek one that, you know, when people would say, the Islanders are playing the Canucks or Bo Horvat scored tonight and future Islander Bo Horvat, you know, hat trick or whatever, and make those jokes. And so I never really dove into him, and he's not one such as a Patrick Kane, I guess.
Right.
Who's, you just know, because he was forever, and because Horvat's had a solid career that's exploded this year. So I never knew really what he looked like, and I kind of still don't, because he's not. I'd say he just looks like a Canadian hockey player. Anything, there's very little distinct about him. He didn't have a huge beard, so that was the
right
part about this whole. It's not as if Brent Burns got traded to the Islanders. that would be a different kind of circus in itself. But that's not knocking him, nor am I feeling differently about my excitement about the rest of the season, which can all end tomorrow if they lose, which is why I'm kind of a little sad this break is ending. Yeah. Horvat was saying he's happy the All-Star game's over. I'm happy the All-Star weekend is over for sure, for different reasons. But I wouldn't say I'm thrilled that the Islanders are playing tomorrow. I kind of like the idea of hope before it either gets crushed or becomes even more intense. So excited, scared for the Bo Horvat era. Maybe soon I'll kind of figure out what he looks like. Maybe by the fact that he's wearing number 14 too doesn't help, because it's just such a
a very common number for Islanders.
Soon you'd expect that he'd have to call Chris Campoli for a little bit of permission, and Thomas Hickey, but and William DeFore, of course, too.
I wonder
if DeFore was his first call. Hey man, I'm thinking about taking 14, do you mind?
We'll see if DeFore is how long he is here before worrying about that.
But I think too, the other one thing I've kind of felt this week is so much attention was paid to the trade because of the unique circumstances of Horvat being at the All-Star game, and every member of the Canadian media, mining and hockey media, reminding us hour by the hour that they are also on scene in sunny Sunrise, Florida.
Right.
That I feel like the it's kind of the narrative around the trade has kind of shifted a little bit from, I didn't know two teams could lose a trade, to this is pretty cool that the Islanders, you know, took this gamble. Maybe not pretty cool, but the Islanders are taking a big gamble, and it's shifted towards, will it pay off or are they just going down swinging? And I think that's the right way to look at it. There still are the people out there who are treating this like the Islanders acquired Travis Zajac for first prospect and Beauvillier, and not Bo Horvat, who was a top 10 pick, scoring 30 goals last year on his way to a 50 goal pace this season. So there is still that out there, but for I think the most part and the most reasonable part, the shock of the trade is worn off a little bit, and people are now set up for the theme of the unofficial second half, which is Lou has just rolled the dice, and they're bouncing on the craps table, and we're all standing around the table rooting it to land on, you know, whatever, to land on seven or not land on seven, I guess. Right.
And 14, I guess.
Yeah. and we're all sitting there cheering him on, and everybody else obviously is there too. So this table is a huge table, and Lou rolls the dice. We're cheering on, you know, an 11 or something. And the media is rooting on for a seven.
Yeah.
And they want us to crap out. We don't want to crap out. And then that's kind of how I'm looking at the rest of the season. So it is exciting. Craps is fun.
Well, the thing is, it occurred to me that this 30 game stretch, and I do appreciate this being like a nice round number, is really the make or break portion of the season. Like, so far it's been fairly disappointing, but as we talked about in our, not last episode, but the episode before, like, they finished 2 points out of the playoffs at the All-Star break. Like, that's not the worst position to be in. Obviously, the games in hand don't favor the Islanders, but this is where we're going to remember this season. This is the part that we're going to remember. We're going to say, you know, we'll look back in 10 years and be like, yeah, you know, they went out, they traded for Horvat. They were only a couple points out of the playoffs at the All-Star break, and then they insert whatever happens here. They either, man, they went on a crazy tear and made the playoffs and did whatever there, or they just fell apart and that was the end of that, basically, with Horvat or, you know, whatever. The thing about, before I get to the thing that really kind of got stuck with me all week, when you mentioned the media, and that's obviously one of our favorite topics to bring up, I was a little dismayed at the amount of time spent discussing, well, you know, they could always just flip him again for something else, get that first round pick back. And I was like, yeah, I guess, you know, certainly, you know, I would say anything can happen, I guess. But like, yeah, I don't get the sense that that's what they kind of want to do here. And I don't get the sense that, you know, Horvat was ready to sign with the Canucks. The Canucks, who have had the most circus dumpster fire season of, you know, of any team in the league this year, the Canucks have been that team. And this guy was ready to sign on. He was the captain. He was a proud Canuck. He had his friends there. He wanted to be there in Vancouver, despite the endless daily stupidity and drama coming out of that franchise. He was ready to sign up for that. And so I don't get the sense that Bo Horvat is the kind of guy who's like ready to go to UFA and, you know, have all the people come to him and gift him tribute to kind of sway him, you know, with video packages about his number getting retired to come play for them. That's not the sense I'm getting from where I'm sitting in my house. But I did find it funny. Even Islanders, you know, people were like, leaned very hard into the, well, you know, they could just trade him again and get those picks back. And I'm like, guys, I don't think, yeah, sure, obviously that could happen, but I don't think that's the plan here. I think they want to sign this dude and like make him a core member of the team, you know, going forward. So I was a little,
yeah, that's that's what you do, right?
Yeah.
Cause it always works out that way. As we learned with Thomas Vanek.
Exactly.
Worst comes to worst, you can acquire a blue chip prospect like Sebastian Kolberg, and next thing you know, your franchise is off and running.
But like, even Vanek was here for like four or five months before that happened. Like, just, you know.
the way that I look at that is if another team on the bubble, say the Buffalo Sabres,
right,
or
Pittsburgh was my go-to,
the for this. Penguins, yeah. So yeah, the Flames,
right,
acquired Bo Horvat, they'd be
right.
None of that talk.
No. What a gamble!
Oh this man, is,
yeah. They're patting the guys on the back in that room and saying we got this guy in, we're going for broke even if he doesn't extend here. What a move,
right?
But man, these Sabres, they really. They're so nice to have them be good in the league again. Or the
Brad Treliving is at the end of his contract and he's going out swinging.
Yes. You know? another big ticket move by Brad Treliving. This 2022-23 has been the year of Treliving. And then, of course, it was the Penguins.
Sure.
Berkey right. Sitting at the craps table, taking another gamble. Like, gotta commend him for that. And this was a conversation I had actually with a couple people yesterday. One of whom isn't really a hockey fan. He's just asking about the trade. And I said, one of the funny things about what's happening with the way sports is covered in sports media and the echo chamber here, not just in hockey, but all over, is when teams make decisions where they try not to lose, they are pummeled, whether it's a punt on the 40-yard line or, you know, something like that. Did you hear about it for weeks on end? It feels like you know, I don't watch the NFL anymore, and the only way I follow what's going on in the NFL is I just see people complaining about punts, bad punts, and bad officiating, and challenges.
This is also why I don't watch baseball anymore, because every game has to have 12 relief pitchers come out, you know, to try and massage some guy to get an out. Dude, you're a pitcher. Get the guy out. That's your job. But I totally agree with what you're saying, so continue.
Yeah, like it's like this message that's being massaged is, if you're not trying to win, what's the point? You know, this point of sports is to win. Yet, the Islanders made a move that is objectively taking a gamble to try and win. And everyone's saying, why aren't the Islanders trying to lose?
Right.
Yeah. You make – if a coach doesn't pull the goalie with 6 minutes left – oh, good job losing, 6-1 instead of, or avoiding losing 6-1 instead of 4-1. Why didn't you pull your goalie with get with the times? But here the Islanders are, they're pulling the goalie with, 2 minutes left, down one, basically. And they're getting, like I said, I think that the tone has shifted a little bit as people have kind of learned to live with it, that you can't go back. It almost feels a little bit like when Barry Trotz was fired and you go through the five stages of of sports grief, and here we are. We're going through a little bit. I mean, what should not be a grief is not the right word here. This is a difference, but you're going through stages here, and now it's people have gone through the acceptance part, and they've moved on to the let's do it. But there still is a bunch of media people out there that are stuck in whatever stage one is, even though they're not attached to this team, and they're mad. I think you might have mentioned on the last show, I think they're just probably mad that the Islanders made this trade and not a more interesting team to them, like the Carolina Hurricanes. So
or the team they cover, something like that. I should say too, and you bring up a good point. Like, a lot of that's coming from people outside the Islanders bubble, media people outside the Islanders bubble. From what I can gather, again, following we did the show basically right after the trade happened, and instead of going around, Islanders Twitter and reading the comments over at Lighthouse Hockey, I think a lot of people are very much in favor of this. Yeah, obviously a lot of people are, kind of skeptical or, don't see where he fits, and that's fine. Like, I get that, but lots and lots and lots of people who watch the Islanders are very into this, and they're like, for the exact reason what you just mentioned, which is that, they're going for it. Like, this is a risky move, but Horvat's a really good player, and they're going for it, and they're trying to make this season count, at the deadline, basically, for the most part, even though the actual deadline is only a month from now. But you bring up a good point, because, there have been stages of acceptance, and grief is definitely not the right word. Grieving, Bo Horvat might be grieving a little for having to leave his friends, but again, as we'll talk about in the All-Star segment, he seemed to really get to be excited about coming here and meeting with Brock Nelson and Ilya Sorokin. But I kind of went through a bunch of stages myself. And the fact that there was the trade and then a ton of no games, so just days off, had gave me time to think about it. And I had to like sit back after doing the podcast and like confront my own hypocrisy over this whole thing. And this is the exact type of in-depth sports analysis that people come to our show for, is when we always talk about confronting their own hypocrisy and mental state following a big trade. But like, here I was, you know, for weeks, months, God only knows, talking about how the Islanders are stale. This team has been the same for the longest time. In fact, just the day before the trade, again, I was on Hockey Night in New York, and the four of us, me, Sean, Christian, Stefan, we used the word purgatory multiple times to describe the Islanders' situation, because they were like, limbo is another word we use, and stale is one we've used a lot. Like, they were stuck. There was the same roster for a long time. You know, a couple little changes here in the Romanov, obviously, being one, but like, that's it. That was the only few changes. We were pulling for these rookies to come up to give them something, and then they would end up getting sent back down again. So, you know, here I am bored to tears over this team and wanting some sort of change. And here comes change in the form of literally the biggest fish on the market, as you called them last week too. And I come on this show and I complain about how I'm not a fan of this trade. I don't know where he's going to go. There's too many questions. Now, that's not to say you can't question the trade or have skepticism about it, but ultimately I came down to like, I had become what I hate most, which is the do something. No, not that guy. Like, I hate that. I hate being that guy. And it really bothered me all week that I had essentially become that guy. I hate that.
If you're the person who can admit it.
Yeah, I guess.
That's even more impressive than, you know, than anything, right? Like,
I guess you could
step back and be like, oh no, I've become that. And I need to stop it.
Yeah. So, I just,
you deserve kudos more than
the
self-flagellation that you took right. over the,
oh, that's this, what I, this week. It's evaluation time soon at my office. And this is that's the exact word that my boss always uses all the time every year. It's like, you got to stop doing this to yourself every year. You know, that's my boss telling me you're way too hard on yourself every year at these things. Like, I'm sorry, it's what I do. But you know, again, like getting back to what I was saying before, like I was reading other Islanders fans' takes on this. And some people are like, how can people not like this trade? And I was like, well, I mean, I can come up with a few reasons, but ultimately I come down to, you know, what you talked about last time. We've got to wait and see how it works out. Bo Horvat's a really, really good player. I mean, he's gotten in the freaking All-Star game, for God's sakes. Like, he's a really good player. And the Islanders just got him. Yeah, okay, fine. Giving up Atu Ratu stinks. Obviously, they give up a first-round pick. They're not going to have a first-round pick, most likely, for the fourth straight year. That stinks, too. But, like, this is we keep talking, this is a win-now team. If they drafted some kid, you know, now who's 17, 18 years old, how old is he going to be when he plays with Matt Barzal? Like, who's signed for the next 8 years? Yep. So they have to do this. This is what they have to do. And given those parameters, going out and getting Bo Horvat really is probably not a bad idea. It's pretty good. Right. And again, he seems like a good dude. He seems like he wants to stay and sign and play with these guys. So that was my week, was confronting my own hypocrisy over my reaction to this trade. And now I got to say, again, by the time you listen to this, you know, it's Monday morning probably, and 7 o'clock that night in Philly, the man's going to be playing for the New York Islanders. So we will find out sooner or later how this all worked out. And then we can kind of look back and be like, yeah, it didn't really work out. Or, oh, holy crap, that really worked out really, really good. You never know. We'll see.
The other thing that I think people are starting to realize, and this all, of course, comes down to, you know, how impressed he is with the schools, and if he signs,
can they show him the schools on Sunday? I don't know.
Oh man,
he is there. Well, there is practice today. Yes.
Yeah. He's in Philly practicing. Maybe his family's on Long Island. They're taking a look around and you know, seeing they're on 7th Street in Garden City, getting a quick look at the restaurants and how vibrant the downtown is there for all the Islanders. And maybe Dennis Seidenberg is walking around. Yeah. Right. Like there's, You can almost picture it. You know when someone pitches in a movie, like they pitch an architecture plaza or kind of like what the Islanders say they're building at UBS, like, and they have the little figurines, like the little miniature thing. I'd like to build that of what I in my head looks Garden City, 7th Street looks like, because that's where I, you know, the Islanders all live. And you know, I've just put some different guys and say, oh yeah, look, there's Bruno Gervais walking out of a coffee shop. And if you look over to your right, Kip Miller's down there enjoying a slice of pizza. And,
is Benoit Hogue out there with the kids?
And because if he does sign that extension, I don't think people are realizing what it does for the team next season as well.
It's another thing,
which
too.
Is it gives the Islanders, you'd assume, you know, of course things can change, but a spine of Barzal, Bo Horvat, Brock Nelson, JG Peugeot, and Casey Cizikas. Like I said, things could change. One or two of those guys can move somewhere, whether it be to the wing or whatever. But that's really impressive. So the Islanders already had an incredible spine with Barzal, Nelson, Peugeot, and Cizikas, and then you just put one of the better, number two, number one, that kind of area where you're like the 15th to 35th best center in the league, which I think Barzal and Nelson might also belong to. You're putting that all on one team. It's a great foundation with, especially with the goalie. So I think taking a lot of people have kind of taken that step back to look at this trade through that kind of lens. And like you kind of realize I've been clamoring for something and now they've done it, and it might not have been, the Islanders might not have acquired, in his prime, Jaromír Jágr, but they got in his prime Bo Horvat, and that's about as good as they could do. I think, like you said, with the people thinking the Islanders are boring, the Islanders we've made fun of that for a lot of the past 5-6 years, but I think the Islanders have definitely been boring the past year plus, going back to the opening of UBS Arena through last week. There's to us, the season's been zany, but it's been zany, but because there's just been stretches of craziness.
I mean,
the
roster has been boring,
right?
Because it hasn't changed, but like this season, I think has been anything but boring,
right?
And crazy, like you said.
But they're still being labeled as this like boring team. I was having a conversation with someone who I work with about, how do you grow the game? and the myth of the casual fan.
Yeah.
And he was complaining about Lou. And he's like, such a Lou move. And I was saying that everyone's been complaining about how the salary cap has killed trades. There's been no trades. The biggest trade of the year so far had been that San Jose Sharks trading Matt Nieto back to the Avalanche. and all of a sudden, here comes Lou, and he does this. And everyone's like, oh, so typical of Lou to trade for this guy. How boring. All of a sudden, like I said, treating Bo Horvat as if he's almost Travis Zajac. but nobody kind of said, it started to come through from the outside a little bit that, oh man, like Lou is out of his mind. This is awesome. Good for him taking a swing. But still, there's still that contingent labeling the Islanders. This is a boring thing. How boring is it that Bo Horvat goes to the Islanders? That hopefully he likes playing, for a boring team and just kind of drifting off into obscurity for the rest of his career, stuff like that. But rather than focusing on, wow, somebody finally shook up the trade market. How exciting!
Yeah,
like it is really insane. And we had to, I had to explain to him. He was talking about how he likes seeing players like David Pastrnak wear suits and stuff like that. And I said, well, there's one team in the league where they have, he was making fun of the Lou's rules too. And I said, well, there's one team in the league where you have to shave like that. And there's one team in the league where you kind of have to follow almost like a set standard, I guess. I don't know, whatever Lou's rules are. And I said, well, what isn't the definition of unique standing out from the crowd and not, being part of it? And he said, yeah, I guess that's a fair point, because and if you look at it through that way, the Islanders are the cool team that isn't, oh man, game day outfits coming to you live from American Airlines Arena, look what Rupe Hintz has got on. Oh, it looks just like what Kirill Kaprizov has on over there. But meanwhile, the Islanders are coming through with fresh faces and stuff, that in a funny way, by following Lou's boring rules, they've become the unique team, the outlier.
I mean, you started off talking about it. I'm just so sick of the rules thing. I mean, I can't even. Do people not work? Like, do they not work in offices where there are rules? I don't understand. Like, my job, you can't wear shorts. Like, that's, you know, we don't have a ton of rules, but like, you can't wear shorts. Okay, so we don't wear shorts, and everybody goes on about their day, and they get the job done despite now. Obviously, most of the time now we're all working at home. We can wear whatever we want, but like in the office, that's the rule. Okay. Like, I don't know what, nobody's ever kicked up a fuss about it. It gets hot. We work in New York City. It gets hot. Nobody cares. It's okay. Like, I just don't understand why this has to be such a huge thing. And like, we've heard it equated to like slavery. And it's like, guys, that's offensive on many, many levels. Like, come on, you know, making sure that Matt Barzell shaves is really, that's not the same thing. You know, also the Islanders have a roster with two guys that can grow beards, right? It's Cal Clutterbuck and Kyle Palmieri. That's it. And they used to have Nicoletti too. So it was three guys that were capable of growing beards. That's it. Nobody else. I mean, have you ever seen Matt Martin with a beard? No. Like, he's it. That, you know, the, and him and Barzell, the only two guys who can grow their hair anyway. Could you imagine Anders Lee with long hair? He would look like he was wearing a wig. Like, what is this, Halloween? Like, it's, or he's, I don't know. I'm so over it. I can't even. But it, and in case anybody's wondering where the whole boring thing started from, there's a certain broadcaster, a man who's made his career getting punched in the face, gave his opinion on the Islanders as being boring. Apparently, we're all supposed to care about this. I do not. This man clearly has not watched this team all season long, because if you think that this Islanders team is boring, I don't know what to tell you, because they just give up a lot of goals. And again, as I've said before, the reason people think the Islanders are boring is because when they were playing their best, not this season, before under Barry Trotz, they took their other team's best players and neutralized them to the point of ineffectiveness. You know, if you're a Penguins fan and you want to see Sidney Crosby do Sidney Crosby things, and he's playing the Islanders, and suddenly, you know, there's 5 minutes left in the game and he doesn't have a shot on goal, you're going to think that game is pretty boring. Well, that's the game plan. That's what they want to do. No coach in the world says, just let the guy who's got the Hall of Famer do what he wants, and let, you know, no team wants to do that. And again, when the Islanders were doing their thing, how many coaches did we hear say, we need to play more like the Islanders? Like, that's because these guys want to win. They don't want David Pastrnak to posterize them every night in, night out. That's the whole point of the game, is to win the game, you know? And sometimes that involves preventing goals too. I was telling my wife this. She was like, I was watching the All-Star game. She's like, isn't it boring to watch a team, to watch a game where you don't really care who the winner is? I'm like, no, it means I can enjoy it because I don't have to care. And to be honest, so many people outside of the Islanders sphere have made watching hockey so awful and irritating that I don't even almost want to watch some of these games, but because it just makes me think of the voices that are talking all the time and that I can't stand. So being able to just enjoy the game for what it is something that I really look forward to.
I agree with what you're saying, and that it's almost become a thing where I feel like we've reached the peak of it. I remember when winning, of course, changes everything. But I remember when the Islanders went on their two playoff runs, everyone went from, of course, the boring stuff, and it became so incessant that people started to then want to be contrarian and say, no, this kind of rules like what they're doing. And and then of course the pendulum now has swung back the other way to where we've revisited. So maybe we're at the turning point again, now that it's gone mainstream with the voice of reason, Paul Bissonnette, saying that the Islanders are boring. He doesn't want to see them make the playoffs, and it's good bulletin board material, hopefully. And it feels like this week has been full of bulletin board material for the Islanders as well. And I think that hopefully helps things a little bit. And we do see a rejuvenated side starting Monday.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to call them boring now because they're losing. Like, you know, back when they were winning, you say it and people are like, yeah, well, they win, so what are you going to do? Now you can do it because it's easy. So,
but I also think that, you know, this whole week, we'll talk a lot about the All-Star game and whatever the hell just happened in the second half. But a lot of talk. There's always a lot of talk about Sidney Crosby. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Sidney Crosby said the NHL playoff format should be 1-8. A revolutionary idea from a revolutionary player who never thinks he's bigger than the game. But one thing about Sidney Crosby in this conversation, when you brought him up, is it's almost as if Sidney Crosby follows Lou Lamoriello's rules
Right.
Just on a different team. And he's lauded. He's like, oh, this guy doesn't get caught up in the in social media or, you know, being too big a personality. And you gotta just give this guy credit because he's one of the best players ever. And he never steps out of line. He's, I mean, whatever his name is, wrote one of the most bizarre fluff pieces I've ever seen. I didn't read the whole thing. I couldn't get through it. I saw bits and clips of it at The Athletic about Crosby and just how he might be the first person ever to be canonized for sainthood while they're still their feet are still on the planet. But he is a Lou Lamoriello kind of rule follower, despite being on a different team. He does grow. I know he grows a little bit of fuzz here and there, and he wears a number that's too high. Oh, that's what sparked the whole thing too about the boring Islanders, which what really brought the kind of masses out above the water was Bo Horvat had the audacity to choose number 14, a boring number. Instead of, because people like, he wore such a cool number with the Canucks for a cool reason, and now he's going to the Islanders and he can't wear it anymore. Oh man. Like, so, and Lou's going to make him choose a number below 40. The Islanders are so boring. So that's what starts everything. And you're just like, what, like you said, what on earth do these people have jobs or where they have to follow like a rule that maybe they don't want, or do they have anything else to do than complain about that? And I don't know. But
there was at least one tweet that was like, Bo Horvat wore 53 for this, you know, teammate that had passed away. But Casey Cizikas is just wearing the number they gave him at training camp, so maybe he'll change it. Casey Cizikas has been on this team for 10 or 12 or whatever it is years. I mean, Casey Cizikas might have his number hanging from the rafters one day. Like, they might retire the three of them, 15, 17, 53, in one shot one day. And frankly, Bo Horvat, Frank, seems smart enough to realize that you don't go up to the guy who's been there for 10 years and ask him to change his number. And he picked another number that was meaningful to him. And again, who cares? Like, I just.
Right. Okay. But that's what started this whole conversation and then led into the
hair,
the broadcast. And then, of course, it goes through its life form, which the internet is just the same argument over and over and over again with 2 weeks in between because people's memories are so.
And the worst part is that, like, I mean, again, Bissonnette is a clown. Like, we all know that. But, like, when it's Gord Miller asking the questions, who's, like, a respected guy, obviously he's really, really good at his job. And, like again, what are we doing here? Like, is there too much downtime? But, you know, is he down in Florida for the All-Star game? Like, you know, and then you got the dorks at The Athletic again, the usual crew, the guys who do this, you know, they reorganize drafts and they, you know, do another prospect pool evaluation every 3 weeks because apparently the guy's outlook for his future has changed in that time period. They're all doing the same stuff and it's the same idiots. And I just, you know, so you got respected people for whatever reason, respected people who I can't stand, and then clowns all saying the same thing because there's nothing else to talk about. It becomes too much. And I just, you know, this is what made me think about my reaction to it and kind of got told.
And it's such a simple thing.
Yeah.
The Islanders made a big trade for a big player in a season where they're on the brink of the playoff race.
Right.
How exciting. Let's break down how this could go through in a number of different ways. If it pays off, here's what it looks like. If it doesn't pay off, if Horvat signs, if he doesn't sign, is this Lou Lamoriello's job? Is this, how does Lane Lambert, how does this put more pressure on Lane Lambert, whose coaching has been, you know, hasn't really been up to task yet. Now he's got to fit this guy in. Like, there were so many different things to do, and instead it was womp, womp.
Yeah. Wow. Number, beard, hair. Yeah.
So,
exactly.
I don't know if this happened in other sports, if like a trade like this went down in other sports, if the conversation would be about, oh man, like,
well, it happens with the Yankees. Like, that's the only other team.
But even that, like, it's like, wow, the Yankees are the Yankees. So like they, when they trade, if they trade, they traded for Anthony Rizzo or whatever. Like, it's like, wow, like, Right. Here's yes, Anthony Rizzo has to shave, but he also is going to play baseball. And here's how it's going to happen. Here's how that matters. Right. Here's what happens to the lineup. Here's what mean like getting a big lefty in that short porch means. Here's this
a sprinkle, all that stuff.
Sprinkle about his like the win probability. It's not a okay. Everybody, let's gather around the focus group for who's going to take the beard angle. It's over there. That's going to be this person at the Athletic, and who's going to take the number angle? Okay, it's
you guys got the prospect pool being bereft angle on lockdown. Go do your thing.
Yeah, who's going to and someone want to take? Who wants to take the cheap shots at Lamarillo about he's old and coach and managing a team that like it's 1990. Okay, it's already taken. Yeah, it's
who,
not.
Who wants to complain about the fans being mean to them? Oh, Dom. Okay, you got it. Go for it. That's yours.
It's outrageous, but I tell you what, a Bo Horvat power play goal and an Islanders win on Monday, and maybe even a win on Tuesday, and we can start, having a different conversations, hopefully, than the ones that we've had to endure over the last week. We've had to endure a lot. I feel like I've been held hostage as a hockey fan for a while.
Yeah, a week of no games will do that to you. But there was one game to talk about, so we'll take a break right there, the perfect spot, and we'll come back and we'll talk about NHL's All-Star Weekend of just bizarre, strange choices from lots and lots of different people, and I don't know if any of it paid off. So come back on the other side, and we'll start talking about that. Thanks. And now a word from our sponsors. First, as always, VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, jerseys, and more featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. Vintage Ice Hockey also carries our Al Arbor and the Island merch, and our portion of the sales go directly to the Center for Dementia Research. Use the code ANXIETY to save 15% off your order. That is VintageIceHockey.com. Try wines from the Pinot Project. They offer a rosé, a Pinot Grigio, and a Pinot Noir that was named a 2022 Top 100 Best Buy by Wine Enthusiast Magazine. All of them are delicious, priced at less than $15 a bottle, and are available at your local wine shops and at UBS Arena. Learn more at thepinotproject.com. Please drink responsibly. Okay, so it was All-Star Weekend. The skills competition was Friday. The All-Star game was Saturday afternoon. I thought the game was what it was. I still enjoy this format. It was a little bit, just as much boring as there wasn't a ton of crazy stuff. It's a couple of cool goals. It was eventually won by the Atlantic Division over the Central Division. I thought the Atlantic had won once before, but apparently not. So now the Central is the only one that hasn't won anything, which is at the All-Star game, which is kind of funny considering some of the rosters that they've had. Matthew Tkachuk won MVP. Hometown guy was again in Sunrise, Florida. So the Panthers guy won, even though Dylan Larkin had 5 goals. That's just kind of how it goes. Again, no big deal. So I thought the game itself was more or less as it always was. The Islanders didn't do particularly well. Horvat hooked up with Elias Pettersson, is now former teammate, for a cool goal. But Ilya Sorokin got shelled, and Brock Nelson was fairly invisible. However, Friday's events at the skills competition were a bit different. Nelson won the accuracy shooting competition, which was really cool. It was kind of like the big final event. He went 4-for-5 in the finals against Nazem Kadri. Connor McDavid looked like he had the whole thing on lockdown. He went 4-for-4 in the first round and looked like he was going to win it. And he didn't, because he took a second to, hold on to the puck, settle it down. And meanwhile, Kadri knocked down another shot, took it home. He went to the final. But Nelson won, again, 4 or 5 shots. Very impressive. And it was cool to see. Bo Horvat, again, was there. He did some of the passing in the first round, didn't participate in any of the events. And then Sorokin and Igor Shesterkin took part in this Tendy tandem thing. They were terrible. The event was terrible. And a lot of the events at the All-Star Skills Competition were, in fact, fairly terrible. This was a grueling 3 hours of television. And I want to say up front, yes, the event is mainly for sponsors and kids. We get that. We've been over this a million times. It's probably much better in person. The kids love it. They get the autographs. People are already asking Bo Horvat to sign Islanders gear, which he thought was really cool. The sponsors love it because everything is branded by something or other. But you're going to put something on TV. You got to make it good TV. Like this is not rocket science. You got to give people a reason to watch this. And the NHL failed miserably for 3 hours. 3 hours! I couldn't believe it. I saw somebody on Twitter. It used to be an hour long. And then somebody I followed on Twitter was like, wait, this thing is 3 hours long? I was like, no. And I looked, oh my God, it was. It was awful from the get-go. They broke up events. So, like, you know, the accuracy shooting was like one of the first things they did. And then it was 2 hours before the finals or the semifinals and the final. What are we doing here? They had the breakaway competition. This needs to be killed, this thing, because these guys have ruined it. None of these guys are, everybody all of a sudden thinks that they're Laurence Olivier staging Macbeth, you know, at the Met. Like, everybody's got this whole elaborate thing. They all suck as actors. It's a good thing they're all hockey players. They're good hockey players because they'll suck as actors and writers. And they would have one, and then an hour would go by, and then they have another one, and then have you know, 15 minutes go by and another one. And they were all terrible. The only cool one was, I guess, Ovechkin and Crosby with Ovechkin's son. It was very cute. Roberto Luongo was there. God bless him. They had this golf thing, which I thought was probably the most successful, but then you had John Buchegras kind of ruining it. All the players are very robotic. People are asking them, like, the lamest questions. Why are we asking people what their strategy is for the hardest shot competition? Who cares? What am I taking notes? Am I coaching people on this? I don't want to know what this strategy is. Just get it a hard shot. Ask him who has the noodlest arms on his team. You know, who's the worst? Has he ever shot a puck so hard it went out the back of the net? You know, like, just ask him goofball questions. Who cares about strategy? Emily Kaplan, over the course of two nights, and again, she does a good job on ESPN. Over the course of two nights, she asked Matthew Tkachuk three times what it was like playing with his brother. Hits his brother. Who cares? Why are we asking him multiple times the same question worded a different way? Who cares? Then we ask his mom what it's like watching the two of them play. Who cares? Nobody cares about this. It's the All-Star game. Ask them dumb, stupid questions that only get asked at the All-Star game. Then they had the dunk tank. They had a knockdown surfboards. A couple of guys got dunked. It was fun seeing Crosby get dunked. I actually saw him smile for once, which was nice. But again, it was done in such a boring way that it just came off as just being very just awful and stale. And I was obviously shot before the whole thing. And I just, and then you talk about, you know, the article you read, Nick Kotsunika, who writes for NHL.com, this guy carries more water for the NHL than every Zamboni in the league combined, right? Everything the NHL does is genius to this guy. And of course, Steve Mayer is the guy who comes up with these things. So the two of them combined in one article, it's like, what dimension are you guys in that you watch this great event? Because it wasn't the same one I'm in. It was bad. And again, listen, I get it. It's for kids. It's for sponsors. It's fine. But like, you're going to put something on 3 hours on my TV, you better make it interesting. You know, yeah, the Super Bowl is boring sometimes too, but it's still the Super Bowl. Like, I'm still going to remember what happens. This was unbelievable. Like, I couldn't believe what I was watching. And, you know, knowing that somebody's going to say how great it was. What are we talking about? It was bad. Did you even watch it? Like, I know you don't normally even watch this kind of stuff, but.
Well, I wasn't planning on it.
Right.
Really. And then I turned it on because I wanted to, make sure Ilya Sorokin didn't get hurt and the curse of DiPietro was lifted.
Thank God everybody made it out alive. Yeah. So that's the important thing too.
So I flipped it on and then it became, and this is a cliche that people use a lot, but I can't think of a more appropriate way. It was like watching a car crash where you can't like really look away. Yeah. And I find Steve Mayer to be a really, you know, personable, like charming dude. And I actually like listening to him on 32 Thoughts. Cause I think in the NHL, he kind of stands out in the right way, which is at least this guy's trying to do things like,
I guess.
He's like, and I think Elliot Friedman always, he's like, I always give people credit for at least trying things. And if they don't work, they don't work. But I think what we watched was just an incredible, perfect storm of, you know, swings and misses on and a terrible broadcast. And it turned into perhaps the worst NHL viewing experience I've ever watched, which is saying something. And a lot of it had to do with the person calling, you know, being the MC. John Buchegras, there was a great tweet from Bud Lightly Man on Twitter about the NHL. The ratings came out, I guess, right?
Yeah.
And they're down big from last year.
Down 22%. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Look out, everybody. And then you had John Buchegras, you know, screaming his way through whatever the Tendy tandem thing was. And the Tendy tandem event was an absolute aberration. And I think the whole point of the event was just so the NHL could use the word tendy. Like, oh, guys, look how cool we are.
Right.
We're going to call something tendy tandem.
Here in the chill, we use tendy.
Yeah, that's exactly
how we call it.
And the most NHL part of it is that they took an almost like the origin of a decent idea, which is, hey, why don't we have the goalies do something? Maybe the goalies can play like a 5 minute 3-on-3 or something where the goalies could shoot on Connor McDavid. I don't know. Like, there's something else. You can throw Mark Messier in goal and have use Saros try to score on him. And they took it and they watered it down and made sure that it became lifeless.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what they accomplished. And the whole thing felt like a corporate picnic or a corporate like happy hour. And because if you ever work for a big company where they're like, oh man, like don't miss Thursday night for the totally optional, but also mandatory. And if you're not there, we will know happy hour down the block at this bar. And when you're young, and you're like, oh, this is cool. Like, I'll get to
want to meet everybody.
Right. So like Mitch Marner is the perfect example. Like, he showed up with that, and you're like, oh my God, look at this loser. Like, thinks it's so cool that he's in the All-Star game. Like, he really went out of his way to think that he probably really wanted to be in this event where he could show his personality and wear his Miami Vice outfit, and everyone's gonna think like, oh, I'm the coolest. Mm. And then you're like, dude, it's very cringy, and he looks like, you know, this guy. Where girl has been at the company for 6 months, first job maybe out of college, and thinks that this is how this thing goes when everyone's just like, everyone looks like Connor McDavid did when they introduced him. Like, I don't want to be here. I want to get home and like eat dinner and go to sleep.
That was my thing. The fastest skater opened the thing and they brought all these guys, Fiala, Larkin, Svechnikov, who eventually won. Every single one of them looked like they were on death row waiting for the firing squad to line up and shoot them. Guys, it's the All-Star game. Like, can we get a smile? Kevin Hayes, the Eagles are in the Super Bowl. Give us a go Birds, man. Like, do something, anything, please. I'm begging. It's the All-Star game. Pretend like you want to be there for a second. God.
But that's the corporate picnic, right? Like, or, you know, oh man, I got to give up my weekend. I already worked for you from Monday through Friday. Now I got to give up my weekend to be here. And I got to participate. And there's a dunk tank.
Yeah. That's the one that really brings it home. Yeah.
And these guys don't look excited except for Marner because he's a huge loser. And it's you're waiting for something to kind of rescue the night. And then there's Nelson, and it's, you know, like, this is cool. And the whole time, my favorite part of Nelson winning is that he just looked so unfussed.
Yeah.
The whole time he just was like knocking the targets off, and it was almost clear from his first shot he was gonna win. And then of course it gets spoiled by on three separate occasions. John Buchigross, Kevin Weeks trying to shout over each other, making the same joke. Do you think the Islanders are boring now? Like, shut up. My God.
Well, they were still talking about McDavid after Nelson won.
Yeah, and oh no, Buchigross, that was
he was watching McDavid as McDavid was losing to Kadri. It's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, this is, like I said, I don't want to give them the NHL much credit for this because it was so bad. But they tried things, they didn't work, they failed spectacularly. But just admit it now, just be like, okay, like we got to learn from this and be better. And there's the fact that going into it for 3 weeks since the rosters were announced on SiriusXM radio or, you know, on 30 Thoughts, whatever, you'd hear the same line over and over and over again. Like, I know people like to complain about the All-Star game and, you know, they go to social media and make fun of it, but you have the option to not watch it. And you have to realize, like, it's not for you. If that's how you're selling the event to your fan base,
right,
that you need to come out ahead of it and be like, by the way, you're going to hate this, but maybe just turn it off instead of watching it and complaining. If you're going to sell, that's how you're selling the event, then there's probably a huge problem. And I also, another thing, a point that's always made on 32 Thoughts that I also agree with is, like, if you're going to complain about something and not bring a solution, like, I don't want to listen to it, which is fine. I don't have the solution for this. So I'm adding into that and being a little hypocritical. I really don't know how to make any All-Star game better, because the as soon as they became about sponsors, and most of them have just become an absolute train wreck. If that's how you're selling it, by telling the fans who are going to watch it because they're hockey fans, and this is like a weekend to celebrate hockey, right, not to watch it and just watch something else. It's not for you. It's for the sponsors and for the people there. And what they're really trying to say is, please don't complain about this so much that they take it away, and I can't go to Florida in the middle of the, you know, whatever, and right, have an all expenses paid trip to Miami. But when they when that's how you're selling it, it's a huge red flag. And now we're going to hear this next week that the stuff on so overblown and whatever. And I actually don't, for the first time, I actually think that it wasn't, like, I don't think people on social media complaining about this thing was like hyperbolic at all. It was hard to believe. It was, I think you said it in a text message to me, you used the word unspeakably.
Yeah,
it was unspeakably bad. I tried to ask a couple people if they watched, and most people said no, of course, because it's the NHL. And I, the same thing, like, how is it? And I said, I can't even begin to explain it.
Right,
cringy, sure, but that doesn't even come close to it. And if your All-Star game is used as a vehicle to hook in new fans, of course it fails spectacularly. But the NHL's problem, and this is going back to that myth of the casual fan, isn't about casual fans. It's the NHL it can't get new fans because it doesn't know how to serve the people who are already fans. Like, all it does is make them mad with stuff like this. So until the NHL can figure out, okay, how do we make these fans, like, not get pissed off watching our sport, they can't attract the casual fan who's just out there standing in the middle of this hallway waiting to be told what door to walk in. Should I walk into the NHL or the NBA or whatever? You know, because they're all out there for sure. Nobody already has too much on their plate in terms of sports and stuff. But yeah, until they can figure out how to not piss off us, actual people who spend money to watch and talk about their hockey team on a weekly basis for an hour. How do they get people who don't even know who Connor McDavid is?
Yeah. Oh, this is not the event that's going to do that, period. I mean, I don't know how to do that with a regular game, let alone the All-Star game. But in the spirit of 32 Thoughts, I'll give you, here's my suggestion for how to do the NHL All-Star Skills Competition. Again, I think the game itself is okay. I know people complain that it's not real hockey. It shouldn't be, because when they tried to do that, it was terrible. So I think the 3-on-3 tournament thing is the best option you could possibly get for this thing. The only thing that might make it better, and they took this away when the players complained, was to have the teams get drafted. If you have four teams, four captains, you know, one for each division, or even just, you know, Team Crosby, Team Ovechkin, whatever, and then they can pick the other guys on their teams, that would probably make it more exciting. But again, nobody wants to get picked last. They had to give a guy a car one time. Like, Phil Kessel looked like, you know, he was very upset by it, or whatever. Somebody was really upset by it. Maybe it wasn't Phil Kessel, I don't know. But, like, you know, that one time Ovechkin was clearly drunk in the green room. That's like the best All-Star moment of in the last few years. Like, do that, to combine two of those ideas. I think they would do that. Also, if you're going to do the one thing in the arena, just stick to the basic ones: fastest skater, hardest shot, the accuracy shooting. And then if you want to do a goaltender thing, just have one on each end of the ice and have it shoot the puck, and whoever gets the most pucks into the net wins. That's it. If you want to do, you know, events where you need a goalie, bring in some college goalies. The fact that Luongo was there was great. Like, just have guys, local legends, come out and do it, because this way my guy doesn't have to get hurt. You know what I'm saying? I'm sure Rangers fans and Predators fans, can you imagine a Predators fan probably sweating out, oh my God, you know, they're in the same boat the Islanders are in. Like, they're just barely outside of the playoffs right now. And if Juuse Saros goes down, they're screwed. Their season is over. Like, so, you know, that was not fun for them. Yeah, okay, great. He won. And Connor Hellebuyck too. Like, they won the 10D tandem. Okay, great. So now, you know, Predators fans and Jets fans can breathe a sigh of relief that their goalie made it out alive without getting hurt, you know. But just have them on the opposite ends of the ice shooting pucks. Whoever gets the most in wins. That's it. Congratulations. You won. Like, it doesn't need to, and the whole thing can be done in an hour, like, and it's done. But for have fun with it. Like, I just, it fun doesn't need to be like elaborate dunk tanks, surfboards, like local. This is the exact same thing that happens with like the I wrote about with the fisherman jersey the first time around. Like, there's civic pride and there's sports pride, and they're not the same thing. Like, having a dunk tank and surfboards, yes, it's very Florida, doing a Miami Vice bit. Yes, fine. It's very. Has Mitch Marner ever even seen an episode of Miami Vice? Does it play anywhere in Canada? Is it on Crave or one of these other weird channels that they have out there? Like, I don't think so. And that has nothing to do with anything. It's not helping anybody. Like, nobody who's from Florida is like, oh, they're doing a Miami Vice thing. They're sick of that crap, you know? Like, yeah, they probably didn't finish surfing years ago. So I would just stick to those basics. Get the thing done in an hour. Let the guys go, you know, have it during the day. Then let, because the other problem, apparently Friedman, I think, talked about this, was like the players don't want to go because that means less having less time with their families. So like while Nelson and Sorokin and now Horvat are in Florida, Ryan Pulock is in St. Bart's with his wife or girlfriend or whoever she is. Like, he's having a great time. God only knows where Barzell is at right now. Like, these guys are all having a great time doing whatever they want. They don't have to show up at in a rink, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, afternoon, to play, you know, a game or something like that. So, and then give them time, have that on a Friday, let them all have Saturday to enjoy themselves with their family, have the game on a Sunday, give everybody off until Wednesday, and then just go there, you know? And I think that's probably the best case scenario, and keep it again with the basic stuff. Cause I think people want to see those. But then the other thing too, and not to start off on a whole other rant, but like everything the NHL does has to be tied to some sort of historic event. Why do we keep seeing Mark Messier winning the hardest shot competition in 1992? How is that relevant to today? It's not. I don't care. Like, nobody cares. It's got nothing to do with anything. So stop showing us that. Why does every NHL event have to be some kind of historic moment tied to the greats of the game? It doesn't need to be. Just celebrate these guys. I don't know. Yeah. Again, all-star games are, they exist to just make people mad and sell sponsors, I guess. So I'm not going to get, you know, it sounds like I'm very mad about it. I'm really not. I just, as a TV viewer, I hate having my time wasted. Like, I couldn't, yeah. And that's where I get mad. Like, as a hockey fan, the All-Star game is what it is. But like, as a TV viewer, I've given you my, if I wanted to watch something that is boring and lame for 3 hours, I would watch WWE Raw. Like, I just, and I don't. So for that exact reason, and now I got sucked into doing it on a Friday night, the NHL All-Star Skills Competition, and it really bothers me.
Yeah, I'd say you have every right this time to really just to be mad, not even just as a TV viewer, but just generally, yeah. Like, yeah. I think generally you do, because it just became such a chore, and it yes. really it really kind of became a good representation for, you know, where the sport is slowly heading, and just like the way it's being led and sold, and the decisions that may get made about everything from cultural issues to content that's put out by whether it's the NHL. And I love that, you know, people at The Athletic are like harping on Gary Bettman, cause this is his 30th anniversary. Oh, yeah. Or something. And we had to endure two columns from people at The Athletic about, you know, holding Bettman to task, and a lot of it was just about his inability to kind of grow the game, and neither looked in the mirror and were like, oh, maybe like what we put out is part of the problem, because it's the same thing over and over again, and it's basically a, if you don't watch the NHL and root for the NHL the way I do, then you're not allowed at our cute little club here where you have to pay $4.99 a month to belong with your membership. Like, no, you guys are also, you know, that's part of the problem here. But I do think that hockey fans just generally had a real gripe, deserving to be mad, because it brought forth like everything that's kind of wrong in a 3 hour event on a Friday night where there's no other sports on, by the way,
right
on ESPN. The biggest sports cable channel in the world, everything kind of came to the surface that's wrong, whether it's the broadcast, the people that are calling the game. Like, I mean, come on, with Chelios and Messier and Steve Levy. Like, you even like Kevin Weeks, to me, I really enjoyed Kevin Weeks' shtick. Yeah. And the more and more he's on these broadcasts, the less and less I start to like, because he's like, he's like screaming in people's face. He's like, I'm with Robo. That's Jason Robertson of the Dallas Stars, California bred. What? Who are you? Like, do you think? And then he asked him, he's like, what's your strategy for this study? And he's like, I gotta, you know, just try my best, put the puck in the net, hopefully it works. And then like he's like skating down, he's like, those are big words, he guaranteed us a goal, let's see if he does it. And then he doesn't score, like, California kid comes up short. Oh my god, just this isn't you know, like what's the game show on Nickelodeon with Summer Sanders?
Oh, what was it, Double Dare? Or
yeah, like a Double Dare kind of show where like it's not that, right? It's not Guts or whatever. Right. This is the NHL. And look, I loved watching Guts, but I was also 13. And if I watch it now, it would be for nostalgia. And I would still love to hear Michael Malley say the same catchphrases that Kevin Weeks just screamed in Jason Robertson's ear. It became so outrageous and. I thought like if the FBI showed up and just arrested everybody involved with that on that broadcast, I would have been like, wow, that makes a ton of sense. Yeah. Please at least throw the book at these guys.
At least it would have been something different, right? Like just to bring up wrestling again, like as I've gotten back into it, I've come to appreciate the improv skills of these folks, particularly like the ones in AEW, like they aren't given scripts. Like they kind of talk over an outline for where they want to get to with a promo or a match, and they just go. And like a lot of times it's totally fine. None of anybody that was involved in the NHL All-Star Weekend has an ounce of improv skills at all. And I can't blame them for that. They're athletes, they're broadcasters. It's not what they do. It's fine. You don't have to be, you know, Christopher Guest or something like that to be those things, but it would have helped a little bit. Like by the third time of asking the guy what his strategy was at the fastest skater competition, I was like, I don't care about this. Who cares? Like, just skate fast. That's the strategy, you know, just to ask who the slowest guy on your team is, you know, who would win in a race between Dylan Larkin and a gazelle? Like, I don't know, just asking some strange, you know, if you could, you know, race some player in NHL history, who would it be? You know, like somebody, anything that's different. Like we hear these questions all the time. Just try something. And so I don't know. But then the different stuff they try is insane and stupid.
Right. Right. Yeah. It is that whole, if you're going to complain, offer a solution kind of situation. Right. Cause like, or if you're going to be mad that they're boring and then they try something new and it stinks, you know, whatever. But,
right.
I keep thinking about more and more how you and I, not saying that the All-Star game was better when it was on NBC or OLN, but we complained so much about the NBC broadcast and we were so excited that maybe there'd be some new life into these broadcasts with the move to ESPN and TNT. And man, am I clamoring for the days of Liam McHugh and Jonesy and Jeremy Roenick, even like just in the booth being like, all right, like at least they're not shouting, you know, Michael Malley-isms in my ear. You know, it's just Liam McHugh talking about Sidney Crosby over and over again. And one last point about Sid before I move on. A bit of oxygen was also way too much oxygen was used on Crosby and Ovechkin being together, and it was cute or whatever. But the build up to it was almost as if people were going to like light candles in the audience, and the lights were going to come low and people were going to look around at their kids and be like, remember where you're sitting right now, because this is a moment like when we landed on the moon or JFK got shot or something. You're going to be telling your grandkids, you remember where you were when Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin skated down the rink together with Alex Ovechkin's little kid. You know, pay homage, pay your respects. Everybody, please, this is a solemn moment for everybody involved. And I was just creeped out by the whole that whole build up to it more than anything. And, the weekend became about, part of it became about Sidney Crosby and him coming out of his shell. And I think the only words I heard him say were, you know, he's, hey, we got to get Sergei out here, and then complain about the playoff formatting, which, and that was it. Like, yes, that's, he's, that's Sid. It's a new Sidney Crosby, don't you think? Like, no, that's the same Sidney Crosby. I know the only thing that's missing here is a goal and two assists night against Kevin Poulin and the Islanders.
Right. to just wrap it up, I'm glad you brought it up, because at one point, I forget who it was, but they equated Crosby and Ovechkin scoring in the 3-on-3 All-Star game. And they scored a couple of pretty goals. Look at that. But like, it was a 3-on-3. It was the All-Star game. They equated that to Gretzky and Lemieux in the Canada Cup 1985 or 86 or whatever it was. And I'm like, right now there are Canadians who are just like, the light is coming down and the hallelujah chorus is singing, because their entire life has finally come full circle. Two events that only they care about, and these guys that only they care about having these, you know, kind of this kind of like synergistic moment, whereas the rest of us are like, dude, I don't care.
And this might be a Mandela effect thing, once again, I don't know if I'm using it the right way, so I'm maybe Mandela infecting myself.
Right.
Haven't we seen this before? Like, haven't we seen Crosby and Ovechkin on the same All-Star team together?
Well, that's the thing is,
After year, why was everyone treating this like these two guys have never met?
Well, you'd be surprised that, because I thought that too, but you'd be surprised because Crosby would back out of a lot. Like, he was hurt and stuff like that. Ovechkin always was there. Like, Ovechkin, I think, has rarely ever missed an All-Star game at all. But like, I know there was a lot of time spent complaining that Crosby wasn't going to be there, or like, he didn't want to, he was hurt, or he wasn't, you know, we backed out one year, I think, or something like that.
He didn't want to seem bigger than the game. So he's like, Jake Gensel go instead.
Yeah. But then actually, now that I think about it, didn't Ovechkin back out one time and they created that rule that like, if you miss it, you got to like not play team's next game. I think that was an Ovechkin thing too. So to answer your question, I guess not. Like, it just over the course, it seems like it, because they've been around forever, but I guess not. They just would, you know, didn't really quite, you know, on the same, and then definitely on the same line, they wouldn't have played, but yeah, I guess not. So, whatever, it was way too many things by far talk, you know, too much talk of this whole thing.
Yeah.
And again,
it felt very much like a, one of those high school, I don't know if people listening have these high school like events where in the one in my town, it was the girls in the grade, like they got split into two teams, red versus blue. Right. And it would be like a gymnastics competition and like a basketball game and then like a talent show and like a skit. And that's what it felt like. It felt like the whole thing felt like one of those, like a high school talent show level where something in the moment you're like, oh, this is so cool. Look at my friends. And if you're there, I guess. And then 20 years later, you're like, Jesus, like, look at, is that me lip syncing Jessica Simpson or something? And it just felt very high school. The NHL All-Star game belonged on like in a high school auditorium on a stage this year. How I'd put it.
And again, if they were trying to use this to sell the game, they failed big time. So real quick, let's get back to the Islanders real quick. So, but again, this is going to air on, you're going to release on Monday the 6th. They have a game in Philly that night at 7:00, Bo Horvat's debut. They are then home for Seattle at 7:30 on the 7th, the next day. So right off the gate, right out of the gate, back to back. Then the 9th versus Vancouver. So prepare yourselves for another throng of media descending. Oh, actually, that's another thing real quick. I am interested to see how Horvat does without the Vancouver media people constantly crawling up his ass. Like, I really feel like he's in for a shock when, you know, he goes from having a dozen people after him after every game. He's the captain. The Canucks are the biggest game in town. All due respect to the Vancouver Whitecaps and the BC Lions, but the Canucks kind of rule over the place over there. How he's going to go from having like a dozen people at his locker stall after every game to having five if Neil Best is on the case that week, you know, and it's going to be really interesting. Because after that game against the Canucks on the 9th, that's it. I mean, they play the Canadiens on Saturday. It's a matinee game. So maybe there'll be some few people there, but you know, follow the next week. The next game after that is the 14th, Tuesday, the 14th against Ottawa. And there's going to be nobody covered. Nobody's going to ask him any questions after that. He'll be like, boy, this is kind of weird. You just leave after the game? That's crazy.
It goes back to that famous when Ryan Smith came and there's that video of Mike Sillinger, Jason Blake and greeting Smith walking down the tunnel into the Islanders locker room, which imagine Smith's bewilderment when he saw this is the home locker room.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And Sillinger's just like, yeah, he's like, yes. Man, this is a lot of media. We usually don't get any media around here, but
right.
That's what it's going to be like for Horvat for a couple days.
So it'll be fun to see him adjust to that. But yeah, so Flyers, Kraken, Thursday is Vancouver, and then Saturday matinee is Canadian. So be ready for that. Yeah, so we'll see, and you know we'll come back next week. And the reality is the Islanders can't lose a game. Like, I hate to put it that bluntly, but don't lose any games, and you know we'll see how it shakes out. 30 games left. It's not a lot. So we'll see what happens. New Weird Islanders also comes out on the 10th. So between the Canucks game and the Canadiens game. The Canadiens game is on the 11th, February 11th. Kind of a big deal for Islanders fans. If you know, you know. And this week's Weird Islanders will indeed address a particular game that happened on a February 11th many years ago. Last one did too, but this one as well. So take a look for that. Yeah.
And yeah, it's just this, like you said, the Islanders this week is huge, and it's going to feel weird to get into like back into season mode after such a nice break. But yeah, you're talking a very winnable game on Monday. Mm-hmm. It's a tough one. I think the Seattle game is the trickiest one of the bunch.
Yeah. But yeah, they're good this year. So
yeah, but it's at home. Like you gotta win games like this if you're going to get into the break. And then, but the schedule, this is as light a kind of stretch for the Islanders as they've had in a long time with Philly. I mean, and this is going back, including, you know, Ottawa, Detroit, Vegas at home. And then you got Philly, Seattle, tough, like I said, but then Vancouver, Montreal, and Ottawa, like they just, they can't really drop points. Cause the, after this little soft part of the schedule, Pittsburgh, Boston, back to back, then Pittsburgh again. So, that's basically a playoff weekend.
Yeah, those games against the Penguins are definitely a big deal, and you know we will cover those next week. They got Pittsburgh, Boston, then Pittsburgh. Yeah, so
yeah, that's why.
Yeah, and a game against Ottawa before that, which you better win. You lost the last time against. Come on, don't lose twice to the Senators, for God's sakes. Good break. At least give us the dignity of that a little bit. But, you know, here we've been talking forever about what are the Islanders going to do? How is the season going to shake out? What does the Horvat addition mean? We will know in short order the answers to all of those questions. Because if they come out of these next 2 weeks without a significant amount of wins, it's not going to really matter. Unless the teams ahead of them start just go through their own 8-game losing streaks, we will know the answers to those. It probably won't be pretty, but if they win them all or win most of them, you know, they're going to keep their heads above water. We'll see what happens. So read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for most up to date Islanders news and discussion. Again, no news as far as that SB Nation Vox situation goes, but once we know something, we'll let you know. Make sure to subscribe to us. Make sure to tell everybody you can about us. Make sure to let us know what you want to see going forward, but spread the word, get people listening to Islanders Anxiety. And we're not going anywhere, so don't worry about it. Michael Leboff, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at The Big Lebowski. Read his work at Action Network. Check out Weird Islanders, the podcast, coming up on Friday the 10th. Thanks a lot for listening, and we will talk to you again next week. All right, take care. Bye-bye.